The following program contains mature subject matter not suitable for young viewers and graphic images that may be disturbing. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hello, everyone. It is Friday for a doubleheader. You know what that means? It's the Wee Wild Woman and Fat Man Farmer Show. Podcast, whatever. I'm the Fat Man Farmer, no Weed Wild Woman today because she is at home with her goats and they are pregnant and having babies. Sorry, I'm looking for traffic as I'm driving. Anyway, so we just got text message that one of her goats just had twins. So now we have three baby goats on the ground and they all look like Dad, who is Gaylord Falker. If you don't know that reference, it is from Meet the Falkers, and he always went by Greg, so Greg managed to get all the little goats, as opposed to the big goats, which we wanted, and, you know, least effort, because he's a little mini Nubian. So we will have three little goats who have floppy ears that will probably stay small and pet size. Being that he is a Nubian from milking lines, we don't know what kind of milk or udders or anything like that he will produce. And we were not planning on breeding these little goats. These are all oops babies. We do not need any more goats. I'm on my way home from Indy. This is our second part of the podcast. The first one was talking about why I no longer am allowed to authorize any animals on the purchase or on the farm. So there's that whole story there. I'm going to try and do this one do a video as well, and do audio now, and I'll overlay it onto a video of talking about food waste and what we kind of do with it and how it comes in, and, you know, that whole general thing. We put some posts out on Facebook about different things, and words and visuals just are not enough. You really need to have more information on it and kind of see it in real life. I did have a video. It's like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes long. And it's some text and some pictures. And it doesn't really put into context some of the stuff. But nobody wants to watch 40 minutes of pictures of just food. Especially food that was going into the landfill. So what has been going on with us and the food banks? We are now up to three separate food banks that we pick up from. When I say that, it's myself, another farmer who has about 100 head of hog. He raises emus and chickens and rabbits, but he gets a bulk of it right now just because he has more animals, and he has a big flatbed truck and he can take about 14 pallets at a time, where the most I can do is between 3 and 5, depending on what is in the pallets. So we're up to three food banks, and we're talking anywhere from 12 to 25 pallets of food a week. And we're not talking containers. We're not talking a pallet with a few boxes. We're talking roughly a 4x4x4 square of food. In boxes, in containers. Sometimes it's just an entire pallet. Like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I got 2 pallets of cake mix. 50-pound bags of cake mix, probably about 5,000 pounds in total, that was destined for the landfill. I mean, that's just crazy. It could be like this last week when I went, I got 2 full pallets of bananas. And we're talking the boxes of bananas. And when I picked them up, I would say 50% were still edible by people. I mean, like yellow, they were turning brown, but they were still yellowish, greenish yellowish. And, you know, they sat and we got through a cold spell, so now they're all brown. But even if they're brown and they sat out in the cold, you can still turn them into banana bread, banana wine, banana liqueur, banana chips. But I mean, all things banana. I can tell you dehydrating them is not the same as the banana chips you get at some of the grocery stores and things. Those are fried. So we tried that. It's not the same. But anyway, so, you know, we're talking a lot of food. And then on top of that, where I'm at today is I went to a distillery West Fork Distillery, or whiskey company, sorry. They do a lot of whiskeys and bourbons and things like this and age it. And they produce right now in the current facility 2 polytotes, which is 275 gallon, which weighs about a ton and a half of spent grain, which is primarily corn because they do a lot of whiskey. They do add some other grains in there occasionally, but it's mainly corn a week. And I split that with another farmer who goes and picks it up for his pigs. And then, you know, William Morrison, who's one of the guys who has the flatbed, he picks up from 2 or 3 distilleries and breweries. And he has his own connections that he gets with there, and those pretty much go to his farm. We're welcome to get it if we want, but right now we get more than we can use anyway. That's why I had to bring these other guys in, because we were just getting so much food, we didn't have enough animals to process, and I did not want to get more animals to handle the food, because if the food for some reason dried up or I couldn't go pick it up, then I have to buy food, and I didn't want to do that for that many animals. So I brought in other people, and they got more animals, so it's not my problem. But, you know, we turned millions of pounds of waste. And I'm not kidding. I've done the numbers. So 2 years ago when I did this, because I had an argument with somebody, and I'll post the numbers in the video so that you guys can see maybe last year's numbers when I did it compared to this year's numbers. I want to say it's like 4 million pounds of food diverted from the landfills. And we're talking, you know, good food that could have been composted, that could have been fed to livestock. And 50%, I want to say at least 50% of this food could have been eaten by people. Now, some people are, you know, I would say, well, that's, you know, it came from a food bank. They were going to throw it away and this and that. I can tell you, here are the reasons why they were going to throw it away. One, it's a size that they can't break it down further and still include all the ingredient list. So, 50-pound bag of cake mix, they can't give 50-pound bags away to people because most people that come through those lines, the food lines, don't know what to do with 50 pounds of cake mix, don't have space for 50 pounds of cake mix, and, you know, can't handle that kind of volume. They don't want to break it back down into smaller containers because then you have to make labels for all of that, and you have to have, you know, the right containers to put it in. So it's more effort and more money and more work than the food bank can handle. So they didn't buy this food to hand it out. What happens is companies, big, you know, production companies, will order something, and for one reason or other, they reject the order. So one time we got 6,000 pounds of sugar because for whatever reason during transport, the sugar got in a high humidity area, absorbed some of the moisture, and the once granulated fine sugar was no longer fine, so it wouldn't like pour. It came out in clumps and chunks. But I mean, if you a little work, you could break it up and put it back into it. But the whoever ordered this says we can't use it in this form, was going to send it back to the sugar manufacturer. Sugar manufacturer says, we don't want it. We can't do anything with it. Throw it away, donate it, whatever. We don't care. We'll send you another one to your specifications. So whether that got written off on taxes, whether it got written off on loss, I have no idea. But they donated it to the food bank. Well, the food bank cannot use 6,000 pounds of sugar. They may be able to make some desserts or something, but that's not something they're typically making to serve to people. So that was destined for the landfill. It's like, well, do you want it? Well, heck yeah, I want 6,000 pounds of sugar. And with that, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do with sugar, but I wasn't going to let it go to the landfill. So we started putting, you know, 50-pound bags in different containers at the house. Well, you can only put so many in plastic containers, and how much sugar can you use in a year or two? So I put it out on Facebook and said, hey, can anybody use sugar? Come get it. Well, one of my friends who's a beekeeper says, yeah, we could use this to feed our bees. Do you mind if I share it with the other bee people in the bee community? Sure, I can get rid of it. At least it's going to use and not go into a landfill or waste. And we had rains coming, so I had nowhere to store this, you know, out of the weather. We didn't want more moisture getting into it. So it went out to four counties, the four counties that touch my county, and all of the beekeeping groups went there. We were filling people's pickup trucks with this sugar, and they all, you know, made sugar solutions or fondant or whatever to feed to their bees, because they collect the honey, then feed the sugar so the bees don't have something to eat over winter instead of the honey. We don't collect the honey off of ours. We just like the bees to have them for pollinating. So as long as the bees are there, well, I'll feed them sugar if they want some sugar water. I don't care. As long as the bees are happy and they stay alive, I don't mess with them. And that's kind of the whole, we just want them there. If I wanted honey, I could, but not something I really want to do. Anyway, I digress. So that's kind of why, you know, where some of this stuff's coming. It's still good. It's just they can't process it to use for other people. You know, they could spend time trying to find somebody who could use it and you know, benefit. Like, they're having a bake sale for a cancer or a bake sale for some kind of nonprofit. But then that takes time away. They'd spend more time trying to find a home for this than just getting rid of it. So that's one instance where this food is coming from and what's going on. So another one is that most of these food banks are staffed by volunteers. So the one particular one I work with a lot is a church-based system. It's one of the bigger food banks in the state, or at least in my area. And they are all done by volunteers. So when they get pallets of produce donated, they have to go through it. And either, like, if it's a 50-pound bag of carrots, they can't give 50-pound bag of carrots to people, but that's how it's transported to some of these, you know, bulk buys, or when farms donate it because it's not perfect looking or it's not the right size or whatever, that the regular buyers won't buy it from them, they donate it. So it's a write-off for the farmer or the grower. The food bank gets it. Well, sometimes some of these have, you know, maybe one or two bad carrots in a 50-pound bag. So as the volunteers are breaking these 50-pound bags, putting them into maybe 5 or 10-pound bags, they start seeing more and more bad ones. Well, this is not their full-time job. These people have regular jobs doing regular things. A lot of time it's high school or college-age kids, and they keep bringing carrots to, like, kind of the supervisors, like, is this good, is this good, is this good? And there's a point where it's more time-consuming to go through some of this than it is just to trash it all, because your volunteers could be making, you know, food bags or food baskets or whatever, going through other things that doesn't take as much time and energy to kind of evaluate whether it's good or not. So they'll throw an entire batch away based on a couple of bad ones in there, just because it takes too much time to go through. Another time it would be that it's in a volume or a size that they can't break it down and still hand it out to people. Like I said about the cake mix, that might be a labeling or an allergy thing. One time we got, I think it was 1,000 pounds of frozen chopped cilantro and basil, but they were in 50-pound bricks. Well, that's all well and good. That's good for storage and transport. But you can't hand out frozen items like that to some of these people. They'll, once they start thawing, you start breaking down, it turns to slush and slurry, and unless you're using it right then, it's no good. So in those circumstances, a 50-pound brick, they can't do anything with it. So it sat in their freezer, and, you know, then they hand it to me frozen as a fresh brick, because we're feeding it to animals. It doesn't have to be broken down, but we did. Let's see, some of the other things. They will not, at this particular food bank, hand out anything that is expired or close to being expired. So I think it depends on what the item is. They have certain rules for certain things. So if it's a canned good, if it's within like 2 or 3 months of it going expired, they won't hand it out. If it's a milk or dairy, they have so long before, they won't hand it out. And that's not that it's past expiration, that it's going to be past. They won't hand it out. Cereals and, you know, breads and things like this, same situation. They won't hand it out. Now, this particular food bank will not hand out things that are damaged or, you know, like breads that may be squished on one side, or it may be squished in the middle or something. They won't hand those out. because the clients, is what they call them, who come to the food bank, won't take those. So perfectly good food, you don't have food, you're rejecting based on the way it looks. So it gets me into the whole, you know, hunger thing, hunger issue. It's a money maker for a lot of organizations and a lot of people. I'll go into more detail on that. Kind of talking about the food right now. If it's a cereal box, if the box is damaged, maybe it has some water damage, but the bag itself is perfectly good, they won't hand it out. If the box is torn, but the contents are still contained, meaning it's in a secondary container, they won't hand it out. So all those things are being thrown away, but are perfectly good to be eaten. My prior life was in pharmaceuticals before I did farming in this. Pharmaceuticals and engineering. Part of my job in pharmaceuticals was testing the products for expiration dates. It's called stability. So we would subject the containers and the products to different storage conditions for anywhere from 1 month to, I think the longest we had was 84 months. So it just depends on what the product is, how long is it shelf stable, the packaging. There's lots of factors into this. So we would test things in like 65% humidity, 30 degree temps, up to, you know, 75% humidity, 80 degree temps, I mean, all over. So what you're trying to simulate is how these products would be stored either in a truck in Arizona or possibly in the winter being transported to Minnesota. So anywhere in that, you got to subject that product in that container to those kinds of conditions to make sure seals stay good, to make sure that the product inside doesn't break down, all this, and it's all in a controlled environment. So it's a chamber that the temperature and humidity is monitored and constantly checked, and then you test them at different periods. So if at 36 months at accelerated conditions, which is like super high humidity, super high temperature, there's no degradation, they can set an established expiration date of X, Y, and Z. And all, there's a formula, and it goes into what the product is and how long they think it'll be good for and yada, yada, yada. So even though you might have an expiration date for, I'm going to go with pharmaceuticals here, of let's say July 15th, 2000. Realistically, that is more like July 15th, 2005. And those are for like pill forms. When you start getting into refrigerated or, you know, injectables and things, it's different. So there's different ranges for things, but some of those expiration dates are arbitrary. You have to have a date, and you do the best that you can. So you've proven that it's good on the shelf for 3 years. Good. So when the FDA come in and say, you have this date for this long, show me the data, you show them the data, okay, we'll accept your expiration date. Could it be longer? Yeah. But the turnaround on the shelf, the restocking, how much does that product turn over? You know, all these kinds of things factor in. Is it cheaper to give a longer expiration date, or is it cheaper to manufacture more often? So that's all number crunching done by the statisticians in the pharmaceutical world. I'm giving you more information so that you understand where I'm coming from, that I understand why these dates are here, what these dates are, and how they're established. So when I say something that says best by date does not mean it goes bad 3 days after that. That means it's freshest based on that date. Everything that is a food product that humans will consume, or animals, I believe, has to have an expiration date by law. So 65 million year old Himalayan's pink salt, which has been around for 65 million years, all of a sudden has an expiration date of 5 years. Really? So the salt's going to go bad is what you're telling me. So it is illegal for regular retailers to sell products past the expiration date. So sometimes they put expiration dates to turn over products, so people think, well, it's bad, I can't use it past the expiration date, you know, the 65 million or something. They throw it away and they go buy another one. Water has an expiration date. Water that's in a sealed container has an expiration date and people won't drink it because it's past that date. So, you know, some of these dates mean nothing. Some of them do mean things. You have a best by date, a freshest by date, expiration date, used by date. I mean, all of these things for dates that some people have it in their head that that is the drop dead date, you can't use it past. I'm telling you, that's not the case. 20 years in pharmaceuticals, I can tell you that's not the case. Pharmaceuticals and food are pretty close as far as a regulated industry. Pharmaceuticals are actually more regulated than the food industry. So, some of those dates are completely useless. If you can get by that and understand that, you can use a lot of these food products that are past date. Now, there's a store local to me that is a salvage store where they will go and pick up or buy, I don't know how it works because I've never worked with them, all of these expired things that the stores pull off the shelf because they can't, like say Kroger or Walmart, they can't sell. A salvage store can sell it because you're under the understanding by shopping at that store, you understand that it could be past expiration and they sell it at a much reduced price. And you know what? Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not, but you're taking that risk when you buy it under the understanding. We've picked up things for 50%, 75% off of what retail is just because it was close to or past the expiration date. I'm still here. We've been doing this for 10 plus years. Never had really too much of an issue, and sometimes it's the smell test. Like, we bought something, ooh, I don't know, that kind of smells off, then toss it. We, you know, it's not worth getting sick over if it's in question. I don't question the date, I question the product itself. You know, you buy a bag of Oreos. We love to go and buy Oreos at the Salvage Mart or crackers or this and that. It's not that we don't buy them for her, but she wants it. She buys as many as she wants with her money. And, you know, sometimes they may be stale. Sometimes they may be off. You know, we don't know, and it's one of those risks. So a bag of chips at this regular store, say Kroger, Walmart, may be $5, $6. You can pick up here for $1, $2, $3. But, again, you run that risk. And usually they price them based how close to or past they are the expiration date. All right, so I digressed, but I wanted to give some background and understanding of why we feel some of this food is still safe to use that people could. So if you were starving and hungry, would you turn down a canned good that was a week or two past expiration date? Just saying, I wouldn't, and I know a lot of other people wouldn't. But some of these people are going to these food banks, throw that food away, won't take it, because they know there's more coming for free. It's not like they needed it, but they didn't want to have to pay for it. Now, that's not always the case. Some people do need it. Some people don't look at that expiration because they have kids to feed. But a lot of people are to the point where they won't do for themselves when they can go get it free somewhere else. And that bothers me a lot. Sometimes I've shown up early to the food bank to pick up because usually I go after the clients go through. Just because it's too much of a hassle to get in there with a trailer and everything and turn around while there's lots of cars. So if I show up early or maybe the food bank runs late, I'm looking at vehicles that are nicer than anything I drive, people who are dressed in better clothes than I have, moving bags from Foot Locker and all these kinds of things that are full out of their trunk to go get food from the food bank. I'm not placing judgment. I'm not judging them. But in the same aspect, if you, that's the kind of lifestyle you have and you have that kind of money, I'm not so sure that you need to be going through the food bank. I don't know their situation, but when I see one or two cars, okay, I don't know their situation. Maybe they lost a job. Maybe they just have a hard time. Maybe they're getting for grandma or something who is on disability. I don't know. But when you see half of the clients who go through there in that situation, that's kind of a red flag in my book. So if you think about, you always go to parks and wildlife areas and it says, don't feed the animals. And it's because the animals become dependent on the people food and then they lose the ability to forage and feed themselves. So if the people stop feeding them, these animals starve to death. Well, why is that not the same case for some of these food banks? and the quote hunger movement or food insecurity movement, depending on how you want to, who you talk to and what it is. You know, I remember as a kid, there was the government cheese box and the government crackers and the government, it was like no name brand, the basis of necessities, the basics. And that was your food if you needed from a food bank or help. Not today. You got EBT cards where you can go buy lobster and steak because that's considered part of, you know, food safe. You can go buy bags of chips and Monster energy drinks at a convenience store because that's what's available. Now, in some communities, all they have is convenience stores. Okay, and there's not the best food choices. Okay. But in the same aspect, it would be much better to have a government station that has the government cheese, the canned goods, the crackers and all that, the barest of necessities, versus I can go buy 13 bags of chips and 4 Gatorades and that's what I use my food stamps on. That bothers me a lot. It bothers me that these people are not getting proper food, proper nutrition. It bothers me that those kinds of things are allowed to be put on taxpayer-funded subsidies or handouts, and it bothers me that there's no other avenue for these people, yet you have multiple nonprofits getting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to, quote, study the hunger or evaluate processes which feed nobody. They get paid on this board, they get paid in these grants to do studies that never go anywhere. And I'm talking in Indy, and it's not just, I can only speak to my experience, but if this is the case in Indianapolis and surrounding areas, it's going to be everywhere. That they paid the grants, $750,000 to develop an app for smartphones for food insecure people to tell them where the food banks are. Well, let me ask you this. If you're food insecure and you're starving and hungry, and a lot of homeless and, you know, mentally ill people have issues getting proper nutrition and food, do you think they have a smartphone with an app? Is that where their money's going to go? Or is it going to go to the necessities? Or, you know, a lot of them have drug problems or alcohol problems. They're not spending money on a phone bill with a smartphone and apps that they download, and the app itself is going to cost money. $750,000 to a group of like 5 or 6 people to develop a smartphone app for food. Couldn't that money be well better spent in other places to actually get food to people? Shit, you could get a bus packet full of the necessities from grocery stores where they're not, go and hand it out in these communities where there are no grocery stores or good access to food. Is that what they want to do? No, because that's actually work. That's, you have to actually interact with people. What they want is money and a cushy job, and they don't have to do anything, and it pisses me off. Sorry, this is one of my soapbox, and I'm trying to talk about food. But the more I talk about it, the more I climb up by that goddamn soap mountain and start bitching about it, because it pisses me off that there are good people trying to do good things. Jonathan Lawler, the punk rock farmer, tries to do good things, has donated millions of pounds of produce that he grew on his farm to see it go to these food banks, and then I'm the one ending up picking it up to feed to my pigs because it didn't get handed out. Do you know how bad that pisses me and him off, that his efforts, his sweat and labor between him and his family are being funneled through this and given to me to feed the pigs? That pisses us all off. And if it doesn't piss you off, you should be pissed off. And the reason none of this gets talked about is because the more people who know about this, the less they want to start contributing to some of these organizations to, quote, end feud hunger. Not feud, food hunger. I'm stuttering and I'm getting my words slurred because I'm pissed off. Back to that. So they don't want you talking about it. And when you start talking about it, it means there's less donations. Less donations means there's less money for these people's board. And the board gets paid quite a bit of money for doing next to nothing. And it pisses me off. And it pisses me off that there's some of these groups that have community gardens and whatnot in Indianapolis, and then the city maintains them, not the group who's running it. Or they have volunteers that have to pay to be volunteers, to part of this, to maintain these community gardens. So you have to pay to be an apprentice, to learn about growing these things, to donate the food to other people. You know, that's bullshit. That's total bullshit. If somebody's going to volunteer their time to take care of these gardens, to donate food, you should give them their education for free. Why should they be paying for it? You're getting free labor. That pisses me off. And I know if the certain people are listening to this who will try to defend them to the nth degree, I've been there, I've seen it, I've talked to them, and it's bullshit. You can do it and defend it all you want, but it's bullshit, and I've been there. Okay, take a deep breath and step away from the rant. Back to the food bank. So some of these companies, trucking companies or produce companies, they have a semi that may have been in an accident. No fault of the driver. They got hit. They got rear-ended. Whatever. The truck is damaged so that when, or the trailer is damaged, so that when they get the whatever's in there, if it's melons or whatever, if any part of that pallet is damaged or looks like it's damaged, if one melon is broken in there, whoever receives it can reject the whole lot. So then it goes on insurance that whole shipping container was a loss, or, you know, they can do it by pallet, they can do it by truck. It just depends on how the contracts are written. Goes to a loss, insurance covers it, replacement for whoever the shipping company was to the who their contract with is, and then they have to do something with it. A lot of times, that company, either the shipping container or the producer, the shipping company or the producer, will write that off on taxes as a donation because they donate it to the food bank. Well, that's all well and good, and sometimes it's a refrigerated truck, and maybe during the accident, maybe something happened that they lost refrigeration and they can't account for like 4 hours or whatever, or maybe the temperature shifted outside of a certain range on a freezer or a refrigerator, so it's no longer considered good or it's questionable. So back to pharmaceutical, my hat from that world. Anything that has to be shipped in a controlled environment, being refrigerated or frozen, has to have temperature monitoring during the entire trip. It's called temp tails. And basically it's a little, I don't know, the size of a pager usually, or it might be actually on the unit itself, so the truck or trailer. And it records the temperature and or humidity for the entire process. And as long as it stays within a certain parameter, that food has been maintained in the proper temperature to keep from spoiling. If, for whatever reason, that temperature device malfunctions, doesn't record, dips outside the range, the person who received it or is going to receive it may reject it based on the contract for the entire container. So one of the loads we've gotten were 3 pallets of whole frozen chicken, and it was in 80-pound boxes. Well, when they went into the container, they were individually frozen chickens in these boxes. You open them up and they're frozen, and you can pull one out and part them out or whatever you're going to do with them. Well, in this particular case, the refrigerator or the freezer, whatever, stopped working. They thawed, then they froze again, which means they're no longer safe for human consumption. I wouldn't want to eat those. And so they had to get rid of the entire batch. So we got 3 pallets of whole frozen chicken in 80-pound blocks. They couldn't give them to people anyway, so we gave them to the pigs. But I'm giving you examples of how this food makes it to the food bank. And like, those did make it to the food bank. These people donated it to the food bank, and the food bank said, we're not going to give this to people. We can't do anything with this, but it just shows up. They don't know. Truck says, I've got a load for you. They come, they drop it off, and that's it. It might be chicken, but they didn't give much explanation about the chicken. If the trucking company happens to know more about it, or whoever's bringing it to the food bank knows, then the food bank has a little more information. So if they don't know about how it was stored or shipped, they don't give it out either. And so what they do in those cases, they put it in a freezer or refrigerator. They have a lot of walk-in units at the places we go to, and it stays in a temperature controlled environment until we come and pick it up. It used to go straight to the landfill. Now they hold it in a freezer or refrigerator, whatever, you know, it was designed, you know, initially supposed to be stored at. When we pick it up, it's still frozen.
when I get it back to the farm, it's still frozen. So if I pick up a pallet of meat or French fries or whatever, they're still frozen when I get back to the farm. And if I feel that those are safe for my family to eat, we'll put them in our freezer. If I find it questionable, it goes to the pigs or the chickens or whoever. There's not a doubt. So, you know, like we had 20 boxes of bags, 2 5-pound bags per box, 2 or 3, I don't remember, of French fries. Some of the boxes had damage, like they hit with a fork truck or they fell over or something, but all the bags inside were still good. And they were throwing this away. Why? I don't know. Looking at every single bag, they didn't have any tears or rips, just the outside boxes were damaged. So we kept them. We kept as many as our freezers would hold. So, you know, I'm giving you more examples of how this food could go to feed more people if we had transportation. The food hunger issue is not a system problem. It's not that there's not enough to food. It's a logistics problem. How do you get the food from various hubs and locations to the people who need it? So I go from our town of Greencastle, which is roughly an hour away, hour and a half, depending on which bank I'm going to, drive to Indy, pick it up, and come home. We don't have those size food banks in our community. I mean, you have some churches and some things like this, but nobody has walk-in freezers and refrigerators that are capable of handling this much food to be able to hand out. So, you know, when I go and pick it up, if it's something that I think people can use, I put a message out to anybody and everybody that I can think of, hey, I got 6,000 pounds of cake in 50-pound bags. Come get whatever you want. And 9 times out of 10, nobody comes to get anything, you know, or knows anybody. Or, well, hey, can you bring it to so-and-so? No, I brought it from Indy. If you want me to pack stuff up and bring it to all these people, that's costing me more money and time than I have available to give it out. If you want to come get it, great. My job is not as a food bank. I'm offering it up. I drove it from Indy. I brought it back to Greencastle. You don't have to go that far. If you want it, come get it. People have said, bring it to my local food bank. Well, our local ones are so hit and miss, or when they're open and their hours, and there's not somebody always there staffed. So, yeah, but you will take it, but we only take things on Tuesday. Well, you know what? This is a frozen item. It's not going to last till Tuesday, and I don't have the room to put it in my freezer and then bring it back to you on Tuesday. So either you want it or you don't. And you know what? None of them have ever wanted to come get anything to rehand out to food banks locally. So what does that tell you? I want to get back on my soap mat, and I really don't want to. So, what I'm saying is, there is literally tons of food, both for human and livestock, available out there that are currently going to the landfills. Someone reached out, because I posted a rant about this a couple of days ago on my Facebook page, and they messaged me, and they wanted to know specifically where I was getting this food, because they needed some too. I told them, I said, we've established these connections and trust and rapport with these organizations over the last 5 to 7 years. If you would like to do this, reach out to some local food banks. Gave them some ideas, gave them some places, gave them who to ask and what to talk about. Well, if you're not going to tell me about it, then I'm just not interested, and you're denying people food. Well, you know, that's kind of bullshit. That's a bullshit way to go. What they want me to do is give them the food that I work to establish, that I go and pick up, that I go and haul, pay the maintenance and the vehicle expenses so that they can get it. Well, that's bullshit. That's lazy. That's the problem with a lot of people today, is they're lazy. They'd want everything spoon-fed and handed to them. And, you know, you can post something on Facebook or any social media site like, hey, I got 6,000 pounds of carrots. They're in 50-pound bags. Pick them up at our farm. Here's where we're at. Make an appointment so I know that when you're coming, I'm available to help you. Where are you at? Well, how much do you want for it? Well, I need to come today. You know, all of the stuff they won't read, they want it all spoon-fed. I mean, if they would have read the ad again, every one of their questions is answered. But they won't. I should get we on this because she gets extremely pissed off about some of these things. You know, and she gets so excited about some of the food bank boxes that, you know, we have what's called the mystery box. And it's dry goods. So it's anything that's not liquid. Well, it's supposed to not be liquid. Occasionally we'll find the most odd things in these dry good boxes. So the dry good boxes could be miscellaneous cereal bars, snack bars, candy, breads, vitamins, baby foods, baby formula, dried milk, hot chocolate, crackers, all kinds of stuff that's dry goods that we'll find in here. Sometimes the packages are open. Sometimes it's little packages. Sometimes they're past expirations. Sometimes it might have had a spill on it and they just needed to wash it off. I don't know. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. But every time we get a mystery box, her and I, she'll literally dive into the truck. Like, all you see is feet hanging out of the container and go through all this. And we'll find, we have these collapsible totes. They're 18 inches by 18 inches by probably 2 feet wide. So it's pretty big. We'll probably get between 3 and 6 of those every time we get a mystery box. And so we'll get everything out that we feel is still good and edible. Whether we think we'll eat it or not, doesn't matter. Then we let Senior Farm Boss go through it because we're not allowed to bring any more of the stuff into the house unless she goes through it first. And the whole story was because we kept bringing these things in, and then we have boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff that we forget to go through, or it's things that we won't eat, or we think she'll eat, but she won't eat. We got 5-pound boxes of 76% dark cacao chocolate nibs, which are like the melting kind for baking and things, and vacuum sealed containers from Colombia, I think. I mean, when I looked it up online, this is like a $40 bag or more of chocolate. 3 of them. Vacuum sealed, still within expiration, in these mystery boxes. When she saw that, she's like, oh, hell yeah, we're going to get this. I'm like, what are we going to do? She goes, I don't know, it's chocolate. You know, I say sometimes the boxes, I mean, we found eggs in there. We found rotten potatoes in there. And because they're run, you know, the volunteers do this, they're not always paying the most attention to detail. So things get thrown in there that shouldn't. Sometimes it might be a container of somebody's lunch and you smell it 3 days later. What I'm saying is that there are lots of places that you could go and talk to. You know, churches that do this. Go to the church, ask them if they do have a food program. What do they do with everything that they can't hand out or that's expired or that nobody wants? And they say they throw it away. Ask them if you can come get it and feed it to your livestock or feed it to, you know, compost it so that it doesn't go to the landfill. 9 times out of 10, they're going to let you take it. And, you know, the one time that they're like, no, we can't do that, we have to throw it away. If you ask them and go deeper instead of saying, why, you know, you could just ask them why. Well, that's our policy. Like, well, could you change it? You know, would it help if I signed a waiver or something that I'm going to feed it to animals or I'm going to compost it? It's not going to be used for people, because a lot of them are scared of liability, that if they give you something that's bad, that you get sick, that they'll be sued. There's actually a federal law that if you give food, whether it's expired or not, to somebody in good faith, and this is including Kroger, Walmart, any place that has food that is, you know, ability to be sold, if you in good faith give it to somebody, meaning that you know, you don't know that it's bad, but you're saying, I don't know, and you can give it to them, or if you know it's bad and you give it to them, then you're in trouble. But if you were in good faith say, I don't know, but you're welcome to it, there is no way that you can come back and sue them. There's a federal law that says that they can. It was put in by Bill Clinton, I don't know, umpteen years ago, and I could try and find the link, or you can look it up. I don't remember what exactly the name is, but it's like a good, it's some kind of food insecurity or Bill Clinton food law. If you Google it, it's sometime during his presidency that he signed it into law. It's still a law. Indiana has its own law about it. Yet Kroger, Walmart, all these places refuse to give it to people and or they destroy the packaging when they throw it into the dumpster, or they lock the dumpster so people can't have it. You know, if people are hungry, they should be able to get waste products, you know, to feed themselves. A lot of these laws that are on the books make people food insecure. You know, and that's part of the problem. Or people are scared of getting sued. And, you know, if there's a federal law that you can't be sued, you know, but people aren't aware of it. Nobody's educating people about it. Another friend of mine works with a group, they're called Gleaners, St. Andrew's Gleaning is what it is. Catholic, Christian, you know, I know they're different, but it's a religious-based group. And what they do, they have contacts with all kinds of farms all over the state. And once a farm, let's say they produce cucumbers, and it's all an automated process, and they pick them either manually with farm labor, or they have a picking machine. I don't know if cucumbers can be picked by machine. I'm just using it as an example. Once the machine goes through and they've graded them all and placed them in, you know, to be sold, anything that is imperfect or not what their contract, who they're growing for, meets, is available. And St. Andrews will go pick that up or go to the field and get volunteers to pick up things that the harvester did not, bring those back to food banks and donate the fresh produce and things to them. They saw a need that there was fresh produce that was going to waste and that there could have been opportunity to feed people versus always giving them cereal and pastas and, you know, canned goods, having fresh produce available. There's another group, Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry, that hunters can donate their deer, or anybody who have livestock can donate like a pig or a cow or sheep to these banks, and the Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry, and they will give them out to different food banks and they'll pay the processing cost. So if you have a cow that you want to donate, you can take it in to one of the processors who participate in Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry, coordinate with Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry, they'll pay the processing, and you can write off that cow on your taxes. Not a tax accountant, don't want to give tax advice. I'm just saying what was conveyed to me through somebody else's. That is donating a product to a nonprofit or organization that will feed others. If you have the ability, great. If you need to cull some animals for whatever reason, and maybe you don't have a freezer, but you need to get rid of them, problem animals, broke a leg, whatever that, you know, you have to process, there's an avenue for you. It's not a complete loss. You don't need to bury a perfectly good animal because you don't have freezer space or an ability to process. So, what I did learn from one of my local processors is that Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry only give to certain communities. That as a processor in his county, they never or rarely gave meat to the community where he was processing. So he stopped working with them. Secondhand information, don't know, I'm not calling him a liar, but I don't know firsthand that that's how that works. So, just passing that along. I don't know if you can specify where it goes. I believe we did when we put it in. We give pigs back to one of the food banks who gives us stuff, and we called Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry, told them where we were taking it. They picked up the bill, and we brought the meat in for them. So, because we were picking up other animals, we just told them we'd bring it in. So, you know, that's an avenue for farm or producers. And then the same way with St. Andrews. My contact no longer works there, or I give you a resource to reach out to them, but you can just go on their website of St. Andrews and Gleaning, and you'd be able to contact them if you are a producer and want to be able to give stuff. So, like, apples. If you come through and you have an apple harvest, or you have apples that maybe are not ideal for whatever you're going to use them for, they'll come and take them off your hands. Cherries, apples, berries, whatever. They don't care. They'll send volunteers out and glean whatever you have to give to some of these food banks. I applaud them for that. They are taking a waste that otherwise would have been thrown away, tilled under, or just sit in the field to rot, and feeding it to people. So that is an organization that I can support and do support. So if you are listening to this and you are in some a rural community or maybe by a big city, start looking, Googling, finding out where your local food banks are. Reach out to them if this is a resource that you can use. Now, here's some caveats that I would add to this. One, if they're on the edge, you can always tell them that it's going to go for compost or livestock. You know, if they're leery about giving it to people or whatnot, that you may use it for people's use or redistribute it. That's something that you can do. In my case, I take everything that they're offering. I don't pick and choose. Like, I only want fruit. I only want dry goods. I agreed when I started this with them that I will take everything that they want to give me. Now, sometimes they will ask, like, hey, do you really want 6,000 pounds of sugar, or can you use 5,000 pounds of flour? And I'll always tell them I'll take it. I rarely, if ever, tell them no. Even things that the animals won't eat, say onions, which is the only thing we found that the majority of animals won't eat. The sheep will kind of eat it. The goats will kind of eat it. They more like the skins and the outer pieces. Dumpster pony sometimes likes onions, but I'm not giving him an entire pallet load of onions. The cow will sometimes eat onions. But onions will compost and to make some really nice compost material for your soil. We've taken them and made dehydrated them. We've made onion powder. We've made French onion soup. So, you know, I will still take onions even though nothing will eat it. And, you know, even if half of them are bad, still half of them are good. Yes, it's my time going through and picking through them, but, you know, that's less time that I have to produce this food, or I don't have to go buy it. A lot of this only works if you have the time, space, ability, livestock to do it. Maybe you start off, if it's you've got a small homestead and just a couple of animals, maybe you start off with a local church and just see where it goes. And if it's more, maybe you say, hey, do you know of any other places? And you keep growing, because that's how I started off. The one woman, Annie, who used to work at St. Andrews, she was part of a board discussion at one of the food banks and said, you know, they said, you know, we used to have a pig farmer who would come and pick up a lot of the produce and stuff that we get. You know, I don't know why we stopped doing it. And, you know, it was before their time. It's like, does anybody know a farmer who would be interested in and why we can't do it, or can we do it? And any of these kinds of things. I happen to have had a connection with Annie about coming and gleaning apples from one of our farms, our properties up at the tiny property. And she said, yeah, well, we're into it. And I was like, you know, we and I wouldn't mind donating, you know, coming and gleaning with you guys and help out. It was kind of a way to give back and teach her about giving to others and work ethic. And the interesting part about when you go gleaning with St. Andrews, you get to keep quite a bit of stuff that you're gleaning. I mean, you're not taking a pickup load, but you get to keep enough for a family. So if you're gleaning cucumbers, you might be able to get two or three boxes of cucumbers and say, I'm preparing this for my family. I'm making pickles. I'm doing this. And you get a portion of it. Now, would they give you an entire truckload? Probably not. But, you know, something like something that you can preserve, you may be able to get more. I know others who glean and they go and work the food banks at a church, and they get to get a certain portion that they bring back, and then they hand that out to other people. So, you know, start off small. So she gave my name to the board, and they reached out like, hey, we've got a couple of boxes of this. Would you be able to feed it to livestock? Absolutely. So it started off with me just going and picking up things in my truck. Well, then it became, you know, more and more. And like, well, will you take milk? Well, absolutely, I'll take milk. And then, will you take this? And it kept growing. Well, what about meat? Will you take meat? I'll take meat too. Because the chickens absolutely love meat. They're little carnivores. The little velociraptors will eat anything, including chicken. They love fried chicken. Or, what you call it? The rotisserie chicken. Typically don't like feeding them raw chicken, maybe some diseases or things there, but cooked stuff, oh yeah, they'll eat it like nobody's business. We feed the pigs meat. You know, there's some laws about that, and I want to get into it. It's the way we do it with the Pig Club Project versus having to cook those things. But pigs will eat the meat. We won't feed the pigs pork. But you know who eats pork? Chickens, turkeys. All of our guardian dogs will eat the pork. So any pig pork that we get goes to those guys. And they love it. And we've supplemented our dog food doing this. Such that we're buying considerably less. And we're looking at going to a completely meat diet for the dogs. I mean, meat with some other things like rice and whatnot. But getting them off the kibble kick. Our cats have loved stuff. So we've gotten milk or tuna. I can't stand the smell of tuna. Never will eat canned tuna. It turns my stomach. Yet, one of these food bank runs, we got like cases and cases of canned tuna. And it looked like some kind of oil spilt on them or something. But all the cans were still sealed. It's just the labels had some kind of oily material on it. Don't know what it is. But they're not eating the outside, they're eating the inside. So our cats ate on the high horse for a long time, eating all of this tuna. They loved it. And when the tuna ran out, they were very pissed. They would look at their dry kibble bowl and it's like, what is this shit? Where's the tuna? You know, I'm turning a waste into a resource, and that is my core permaculture type of deal. Damn it, I was supposed to stop somewhere on the way home, and because I was talking to you guys, I forgot about it. I'll have to go back out later. Anyway, so if you're interested in this, you can get on our website, wolfbeachfarms.com, and look up the Pig Club Project, and it gives some of the details and how we can get away with feeding meat to the pigs and how we set it up and these kinds of things. But I highly encourage you, if you're interested in this, reach out in your local community to some of these places. I don't want to say where we're going because I don't want these places to be inundated by anybody and everybody. They don't understand the process. They don't understand how much volume it is. And these places can still contact me or one of the other individuals, the other farmers, and say, hey, we've got to pick up. We need you to come today. Versus it's a daisy chain and 20 or 30 other people trying to get in and out. Maybe they're not as reliable. Because the three of us are on there, if they call and say, hey, our cooler is filled. We need somebody to come pick up in the next day or two. Between the three of us, we make it happen. If we have to unload a trailer or even rent a trailer, we'll make it happen and help them out. You know why? Because over the 3 to 5 years, they've helped us out tremendously feeding our animals and us, and we'll do whatever we have to help them out when they need it. And that kind of relationship and back and forth is earned, and somebody else to come in and try to undercut that really bugged me. So, go out and ask. It doesn't hurt to ask any of these organizations, can you pick stuff up? Can you do these things? I knew a guy who went and talked to his local Aldi and said, hey, you know, I see you guys in the dumpster throw all this stuff away. Would you mind if I came once a week and picked up whatever's there? And he talked to the manager. He goes, this is for livestock or dogs or whatever. And the manager was perfectly fine. Another person went to a different Aldi, and the manager was like, no way, you can't do that. We're not okay with that. But person number one offered that up, said, you know, whatever you say, I'll be respectful. I'll come only on the days that you tell me. I won't bother anything, those kinds of stuff. And, you know, that's how it went. I lost one of my pieces of my mic. Anyway, I'm back home. I'm done ranting and raving. What I wanted to communicate to you guys is there is a lot of food that is going into landfills all across this country, and it doesn't matter. They could feed people, especially with some of the food prices and the costs and the shortages. Why are we throwing food away that's perfectly good that, you know, people could eat? And a lot of times it's money and regulations. So I am going to get off here. I will go home. Try to put this to a video. So the podcast will be available before the video is. And, you know, we'll go from there. So until next time, it's the Fat Man Farmer.